Hello, 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 and welcome to the Grant Writing and Funding Podcast, where we help passionate people create stable income with flexible schedules by getting ideal nonprofit clients with the best grant writing and nonprofit sales strategies in the industry. My name is Holly Rustick, and I went from working 50 plus hours per week as a grant writer inside a nonprofit, living paycheck to paycheck, to opening my own freelance grant writing business and only working part-time hours, earning more than I ever had before. Inside our programs, the Freelance Grant Writer Academy and the Grant Professional Mentorship, I have helped more than 100 changemakers get out of toxic 9-to-5 jobs and replace their full-time incomes while working part-time as a grant writer from home and around the world, simply by learning how to write grants through our grants writing formula and implementing our unique approach to nonprofit sales. Join these aspiring and seasoned grant writers so you too can secure ideal nonprofit clients with cause areas that you fully believe in, get them massive funding, and be able to set your own schedule and revenue goals. Be sure to join our weekly email newsletter, the Freelance Grant Writer Hub Haven, where you get stress-free nuggets on the financial stability components and skills of being a freelance grant writer. Plus, you get updates about the Freelance Grant Writer Academy. Just go to grantwritingandfunding.com to subscribe. And now let's get ready for the most bold, empowering, and approachable coaching and conversations you've ever heard. Let's create a higher standard of stability, freedom, and legacy together. Hello, hello, hello. It's Holly Rustick here with Grant Writing and Funding, and welcome to the Grant Writing and Funding Podcast. Today on the show, this is awesome. So if you are a freelance grant writer, grant writing professional, or a nonprofit, especially a nonprofit leader of a small nonprofit, you better take some notes. Take some notes today, because I have special guest on the show, Brian Marr. He is the owner and president of BKM and Company and is a nonprofit fundraising specialist. He owns this grant writing agency that really works with especially startup nonprofits and small nonprofits to really grow their grant funding strategies. Today, we're gonna talk about how he actually runs his company. And it's a very unique company because he actually has on staff about 10 people who are grant writers underneath him, and he oversees all of these grant writers as well. So they're able to write a ton of grants every single month for their nonprofit clients. And they're able to do it at a price point that makes sense, especially for a small nonprofit. Brian is also a part of the Grant Professional Mentorship Program this year, and it's been really great to see how he's been able to grow his team. And also, I remember just on the call the other day, it was so great because he said, my win this week is that on the downside, I was sick for 12 days, but on the upside, I literally couldn't get out of bed, and my company still was able to do all the things that are needed to get done. Everybody was working, everybody got things done. Like, it was fine to take off time and not be there and have all the grants still getting written and all of the clients still getting delivery. So, and he's like, and we booked sales calls. So good. Not that he was sick, but by having the systems within the Grant Professional Mentorship, he was able then to say, oh, you know what? I could probably take off time this year and take a vacation, right? You're getting on. I'm like, all right, come on. What's your 2 to 3 week vacation coming up? So this is definitely for you all. Tune in. I would love for you to hear about how he actually manages his team, how they're able to get that many grants actually written and out to their clients, and have a very affordable price point. And for you smaller nonprofits that are listening to this and you're like, oh, that sounds great. I would love to have those services at that price point. Be sure to check out the show notes today, grantwritingandfunding.com/314, so you can get the links to contact Brian. He is also one of our grant writers for hire on our website and our grant writing directory. And we vet every single writer that is listed there, so you can also find him there. To hear about all of the systems that he's implemented from the Grant Professional Mentorship and how that has actually created an 18% increase in finances and revenue, plus be able to start booking out sales calls left and right and closing them those sales calls, you are definitely going to want to hear this podcast today. To find out more about the Grant Professional Mentorship and to join the waiting list, please go ahead and check out grantwritingandfunding.com/314. We will also have that list there. So if you already have a grant writing, you know, you're even if you're a freelance grant writer, but you've probably hit around 50, 75, or even 100K in your business, or you've already started to grow out your team a little bit, but you're like, whoa, I never know exactly how to hire my team. I'm not really sure what they should be doing. I don't know if they're really efficient. I don't know if I'm communicating well. I want to be able to scale my company. You are definitely going to want to join that wait list. So grantwritingandfunding.com/314. All right, here's Brian. So welcome, Brian. Super excited to have you here on the podcast.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Holly.
Yeah, love it, love it. So let's talk about you. Let's dive back a little bit and be like, what got you started into grant writing? You have a grant writing agency, like you've been doing it, you're serving clients, you're growing like crazy, you're serving all of these amazing needs, like, but what got you started into this business?
Yeah, so after I got out of the Air Force, I started fundraising, started in K-12 schools, then worked at university, and then for about 5 years, I worked at a disaster response organization. And from there, I got burned out on fundraising. And I left it, started working in construction. And when I started working in construction, I ended up breaking my hand. And during that whole, it was only 6 months. Mm-hmm. And during that time, my boss, who's my best friend, was like, Brian, you get calls all the time from nonprofits. Asking questions and seeing how I can help. And he's like, see if you can make something of it. And I fell into consulting. I didn't intend to be in fundraising, stay in fundraising, anything like that. I literally fell back into it as a way to help the small nonprofits that were reaching out saying, hey, what can you do to help us in these situations? So that happened right before COVID in 2019. And I signed some disaster response clients, and then COVID, as a federally declared disaster, became my bread and butter for a few years, as that was the absolute main piece of what was going on. So that's what kept me involved.
Wow! So like breaking your hand right into this consultation and working with nonprofits, like literally fell into it. Like,
that's exactly what happened.
Wow. And, you know, and I love that because you're like, you're looking at COVID, like a lot of grants, a lot of monies are released, a lot of nonprofits and businesses are now like, oh my gosh, we can get our hands on this. We need to get our hands on this, right? So really good time for more grant writers to step up and help because, man, that was a lot going on for nonprofits just to think of all the other pieces, right? They didn't have time to focus on like grants as well or grant research or where do we hear about all this money being released, but where is it? How do I actually tap into it? What are the eligibilities, right? What were some of the common questions or problems at that time that you heard all the time when people were calling?
Well, even the way that I figured out that grants was the place to go is I was specifically working in corporate relations with CSR teams and marketing teams and realized that even from a corporate side, it became very clear that things were changing in how they were giving grants out and the process in which most annual reports would come out are very heavy on the paperwork. And so it was like I was writing really big grants to Fortune 50 companies and realizing, oh, this is not as difficult as I thought it would be. Mm-hmm. First of all, as long as I had the data and the numbers. And then second, it was very clear that internally with the organizations that I was working with, there was this pause of, oh, well, we're not grant writers. How do we figure out how to actually successfully submit these? And so it was like, okay, well, let's figure that out together. And then after having a few very large successful grants go through, you know, everybody gets excited when $1 million grant goes through. And I wanted to get excited about the ones for the organizations that weren't bringing in $1 million grants. And so trying to find that balance. And then during that whole process of COVID, there was the great resignation and you had all these people who were wanting to work for themselves and not the man anymore. And so I took that as an opportunity to snatch up talent of people who didn't actually know how to find the work on a consistent basis. They could find the work, but it was job to job to job. And so I said, hey, what if I give you a little more consistent work, even if it's, you know, a little less, there's just consistent pay and consistent work. And everybody who I talked to was like, absolutely. Because then it gave them the freedom to do the projects that they actually wanted to do while having consistent income, as long as they hit some really what I'm going to call basic metrics along the way. And so during the last 4 years, it's just been this evolving process of how we figure out together what it looks like to grow and then consistently have grants that are out there that are written and won.
I love that. I love that so much. And where are you based? But again, where?
So I live in Detroit, right outside Detroit. And of the 10 contractors that I have, I think there's two that are in Michigan. Everybody else is around the United States or around the world.
Right. Cause you're talking about, you could pull talent. So I think that was so smart of you too, to be like, you know, the Great Resignation, like, it was also people that saying, I want to open a nonprofit, I want to do something different, right? So like also helping out those organizations that are new that might think, oh, I can get money like right away. And you're like, okay, let's set up a plan, let's help you out. But also the talent, I think that was so smart of you to be like, hey, this is work. You know, people were looking for more meaningful work, to work from home or remotely, like you have, right? I think you have one employee or two employees like in,
I have one part-time employee. Yep.
Yeah. So that's everyone it. Else, you guys can meet online, right? To go through anything.
Exactly.
Yeah. So I love that so much. So we're definitely going to get into your structure of how you run your company, because I think that's so interesting and it's so much value of what you bring to nonprofits. But before we get there, like, who are the main organizations that your company serves, and like, what are the services that you provide?
Totally. So I have my litmus test for how I look at any organization is, I like to work with people that I like, you know, and that doesn't necessarily mean I have to know them today. But it's usually people that I like to work with, that I get along well with. But then really looking at a couple things, one of them being they're an organization that is all about transformational relationships and not necessarily transactional. I know that's not how grant writing always works, but outside of grant writing, there's this larger than just the application process. You can build relationships. And so how they look at relationships. I also look at impact that an organization has. So whether it's local, they really have to show that they've had impact with what they do. Most of the organizations I work with have a national impact, do something nationally or internationally where they're at. So I also fundraise for organizations that have impact outside of the United States. And then really have the ability to focus on what it looks like for growth. So if they are just trying to maintain the status of what they're at, I really want there to be this opportunity for what it looks like for, you know, asking all the what ifs. What if somebody gave you $1 million today? What if some donor dropped, you know, all this money on your plate? What would you do with it? And if they're able to answer that question, which for a lot of nonprofits, they're hand to mouth and not able to think of what that next potential is. They have, you know, as long as they've dreamed of what that next thing is, then I'm all on board with whatever that next step is with them.
Right. That's awesome. And then I know we had talked in the green room before, and you were talking about like a lot of your clients are like under the 2.5 million annual operating budget per year. And even you have, I think, a higher percentage in the under 150,000 per year. So you offer services that are affordable as well and can meet the budgets of those types of nonprofits, right?
Yeah, that's the whole piece is really focused on not wanting to overcharge nonprofits that don't have money. So I've had experiences with consultants that come in and charge an arm and a leg, you know, $10,000 plus per month, and then don't deliver. And for nonprofits that, you know, bring in $100,000 a year, you know, that's only 10 months if you were to do the math on that. And I said, you know, that's not fair to nonprofits, that there isn't an agency that can come in and do essentially the same services as those larger organizations. And by all means, the larger organizations, they do great work. I'm not trying to, you know, combat anything they're doing. And they're definitely needed in the nonprofit space. I'm just trying to help out the little guy. I regularly come across organizations where, you know, husband and wife team, the husband runs the operations and is the executive director and the wife does the books. And you know, sure, they applied to the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation and McKinsey Scott and, oh, they didn't get it. And now they're writing off grants. And it's like, okay, well, did you have a researcher? Did you have a writer? Did you have a process? Are you familiar with the process? And the answer is always no. And just go, okay, well, let's walk you through what that actually looks like and able to deliver on something that is, you know, not simple, but it's not difficult to put together a strategy for what it looks like for that organization. So my deliverables are quite simple. I do fundraising audits. So go through top to bottom, what it looks like their fundraising platform is, from everything from their major donors to individual giving, all the way to grants and events, and really give a really in-depth look within the organization after doing a lot of research and discovery and asking them a lot of tough questions, honestly, to say, hey, what does it look like and what should it look like? And then it kind of gives them a roadmap of, if you do, you know, one of the things from the category that I chose, I think you'll be moving towards something good. And that's a pretty basic package. The other main package that I offer is grant research and writing, which is really focused on exactly that, grant research and writing. My whole model is I'm going to be half the price of a full-time grant writer doing double the work, and an augment to your team. So you're not going to notice that it's something different, or I'm not going to be bugging you with questions. I ask for a lot of that information up front, and then we just go to town to deliver more than what a full-time person would be without you having to go and hire a full-time person and wonder if it's going to work out. So, and then the last offering that we really push is kind of the, what does a step-in director of development really look like? So that includes the grant writing, because there needs to be consistent asks throughout the month, but then it's really guiding and coaching an executive director or director of operations or whoever that is to look at what it looks like to talk about lead generation and actual asks to donors, setting up events, if that's really where it's at, kind of the catch-all development director without having to create more. It's a lot of maintenance, but then it's also like, hey, if we can push forward, kind of going through that audit, if we can push this thing in this year, I say all the time, in any nonprofit, there's always going to be 10 things in development that need to happen right away. Let's get really good at two at a time before going on to the next ones. And so really focusing and honing in on those two and coaching along the way. So, you know, it can't just be me and it can't just be them. So let's do this together to move on and what that is. But grant writing is always a piece of that to make sure that applications are out there and the name is getting out there. Most, you know, you think, hey, we know what we're doing as nonprofit X. Well, you know, the whatever foundation out of Wyoming has no idea who you are. So you need to apply so that they know who you are. And once they learn of you and do their own research, then you might have, you know, a new funder or whatever that looks like. So, but they're not going to know of you if you don't put something out there. So I'm all about name recognition and brand recognition so that if those things can increase, then you have more likelihood if people know who you are that a gift will come in.
I love that. I love that so much. Yeah, and you're like, kind of like, here's the 10 things that you guys are doing. We're really good at the grant writing the research, so we'll take that off your plate right away. And then let's look at the rest, right? And let's figure out what you're going to focus on. So I love that. Even in business, right? That's what we like to do, because we like to have a lot of things going on and all the things that we can do. But to pull it back and be like, what do we have the capacity to focus on and what do we really want to drive forward? So yeah, these are really great services to have, just staple services that you can provide, especially to a specific niche nonprofit, right? That size. So when you look at that and you're taking on any national nonprofit, and I really love that so much, And then looking at these types of services, I also want to talk about, and we talked about your capacity and your team a little bit. So you're able to charge like certain rates, like you said, I'm not charging $10,000 a month, but I'm doing like this amount of work. How do you do that in your business, right? Keep up that high quality and the high volume of clients, you know, with your team then? Because this is what's made you really be able to lean back to and grow your business.
Yeah, I say this all the time. Right above where I'm recording, I have a bookshelf and I have about 50 books on fundraising. About half of them are about grant writing. And the first, about 24 of the 25 of them are all, this is how grant writing is prior to COVID. And mm-hmm. and I kind of use COVID as this time and place where things shifted. Yeah. You know, people always talk about the new normal. And I think that's very true with the grant writing process and systems. During COVID, people being at home decided to create new technology, new systems. You know, we talk about AI all the time because it's new, or it's really not new. It's just there's new applications of it now. And so the whole piece of one of the reasons that I'm able to keep my costs low is because I have increased my output utilizing technology. And so whether I'm leaning into the database, we use Instrumental, you know, we really lean into that. But what we don't do is take out the human component. And so while we do utilize AI for certain things, we don't let AI be the only thing that is driving how we use put applications out there. Same with how we do research. We let the initial pass go by and then have a researcher actually go through it. And then from there, we have it vetted two more times before we actually get it down to being ready for a grant writer to actually write. And so by the time that a grant writer is ready to write, and that's the other piece, is I separate research and writing. And so when my grant writers are ready to write, they don't have to do the research. And that's a very time-consuming piece of grant writing, is the research piece. And so the output and to be able to double what a full-time person is able to do in-house is taking that research piece off their plate and saying, hey, we could go catch all the fish in the sea and put every application out there, but I'm really looking at organizations that have the ability to give specifically to the organizations that I'm fundraising for. And so when a grant writer goes in and says, hey, I'm going to apply for, you know, this many organizations during the month, they know that when they're going to the list of organizations that are out there, they are ready to apply. They totally fit the organization. They just have to do it by the deadline. And that's it. You know, there's, you know, there might be one or two questions from the organization that, you know, hey, we need the updated numbers to make sure it fits the program budget or whatever, but it's not, tell me about the organization and tell me about all the research. You know, you don't have to do that piece that takes up the time, which is why I'm able to bring on more clients, because then it basically, when I started doing the research, it was like, hey, if I only have one pair of glasses for my organization, I might be looking at only applications for disaster relief. But then if I have an education grant, I might be looking at education grants and see, oh, this organization also gives to disaster relief. So the more glasses that I put on, I started seeing the full picture of, hey, this doesn't actually come up in this research. It comes up in this research. Why not? And I'm able to double up and add more really good opportunities for those clients. And so the success that's come off of that is being able to say, we can guarantee that you're going to have really quality applications going out, and doubling what it would be if you had a full-time person. Oh, and by the way, it's half the cost of what it would charge if you had that full-time person in there. Okay. And the proof is in the pudding. It works. Yeah. You know, by the amount of applications that have gone out and the amount of money that's come in. And so, you know, 3 years into doing this, everything's a refined process. Nothing is, you know, and I look at the books above my desk to say, like, hey, that time before COVID, it was a refined process that it was like, hey, don't mess with the formula. now that we're past that, I'm like, let's mess with the formula every day. Like that, let's see what works and see what sticks to the wall, because we're in this different scenario right now. And so I'm really at this point where, and I'm not the guy who goes and stands in line for the new phone or whatever. I'm not the early adopter when it comes to technology, but when it comes to potential solutions or a new database or whatever, it's like, hey, let's try it out. See what it feels like, see how it fits into our business. And if it works, let's adapt it, you know, and figure out what that new thing is. And so that's kind of how I am with AI, where it's like, I think it works 60% of the time. Fantastic. But I can't rely on that 40% of not working for my business, right? There has to be that human element where we can take that piece and say, hey, we're going to go all the way until we can't, you know, and then pull back. But really the proof is in the pudding that it works to do it this way. It's just not a singular way of doing things.
Right. And I like how you're structuring your business as well, just like you're kind of pitching it to your clients, like, hey, we're going to focus on this one thing. You don't have to. If you had to hire somebody, you would pay double that, just because you would pay double because they're not just focusing on that when you have an employee, right? They're also going to those random meetings. They're going to this, they're probably doing, you know, they're doing, like, their hands are in too many things. So they're really not even full-time grant writer, even if you hire them. But for us, our agency, that's what we'll focus on. Like, that's our focus. So even in your business, you're doing that with your contractors. Focus on grants research. Absolutely. You're focusing on this, right? So you're taking that same philosophy and then putting it into your business. And practically, like, I love that so much that you practice what you preach. Like, it works. Yeah. Like, hire me, it works, because I do it in my business too. And it works.
The amount of times that I'm actually working on my business and saying, oh, I need this process, I'll go to an organization that's bringing in $50,000 and looking through the requirements for a grant and say, oh, they don't have this document prepared. I need to coach them on how to do that. And it's this circular thing where it's like, I'm coaching them, I'm coaching myself of saying, I need to do this for my own business. And it's you know, the rising tide raises all ships. So at this point, it's like, why not help the small organization thrive by, instead of, you know, nickeling and diming them for different pieces, it's like, hey, I know you don't know how to do this. I'm going to coach you to see how we can get it done together so that we can put our best foot forward with this grant application. And, you know, 99 times out of 100, there's this deep appreciation of saying, you know, you moved us forward. And that's really what organizations care about. It's not necessarily, hey, we got, you know, $40,000 of our $50,000 budget. It's, hey, we actually feel prepared for the next time that we go into a meeting with a donor, because we have this extra piece that we can hand them because you said it was valuable information. And it's not me saying it's valuable information. It's a grant application asking for it. You know, there's people that are wanting that information, that it's so crucial. So if I look in the mirror, I say, hey, if I can refine my process and if I can grow my team in a way that's efficient, you know, having job descriptions or having assigned roles and you know, whatever that looks like, everybody's happier because there's clarity with things, you know, and it becomes less about, Brian's the boss and he's doing this. It becomes a team effort to say, hey, we did this together and we can celebrate the wins together as a team, not, you know, whatever the piece is that people have frustration with, you know. So it makes it a lot more gratifying to be able to say, you know, we did this together.
Yeah. And I love that. Yeah. Cause when people hire you, they're just not hiring you, they're hiring the company. Like, you have a way of doing things. So that's, you know, you have processes. And let's just talk about, like, as a segue into that, you joined the mentorship, you know, just several months ago, but in it. And, you know, we're talking, I said, okay, what's been the biggest impact so far? And you're really talking about, like, systems. So can you kind of share that, like, how it's helped already, you know, increase your revenue? We talked about that by 18% already, but you were saying, but more than that, it's like, where there's more flow, there's more clarity. So can you kind of speak on that?
So my employee that does a lot of my, what I'm going to call clerical work, I'm not the guy who loves sitting in Excel and doing all that. She does, and I love her for it. But what we regularly have conversations with is, she'll say, hey, where does this information live? And I, you know, sheepishly will be like, well, it's all in my head. And it's like, that is not good. That's not good for any company. And so it's like the ability to say, hey, I need to create this process. I need to put it somewhere on paper. I need to create this chart, whatever it is, and then have somebody to walk through me with how to create it to look, you know, good, or, you know, to where it makes sense to somebody other than me. That's a huge piece. So as we're talking about process, you know, I'll regularly take notes to say like, oh, I don't have that in my business. I need to work on this like today. So, you know, we'll have our nightly or quarterly night meetings. And, you know, by 9 o'clock the next morning, it's always just like, hey, sorry that I just dumped all these things, but I need you to help me to create these systems and help me create these flows, because all of a sudden I see the value of saying, hey, now we have a chart how to track everything outside of my brain, or outside of the whiteboard that's, you know, behind me or whatever. And that's, you know, that's not fair to people that are working for me, where I have expectations that aren't communicated. But if it's all out there and all out in the open, then it's very clear what the expectations are and the process and what that looks like. I mean, there's a really big flow right now of just creating timelines that make sense for clients that is literally all in my head, where I can sell it, but then to show them is a different thing. And so I'm in the process of like, okay, if I can show them right now, then there's no question throughout the 6 or 12 months what the expectation is on that call once a month or biweekly or whatever that is, of what the timeline actually looks like. So, you know, I might present to them all of the opportunities in the year that we're going to go after, you know, and there might be 100. And in reality, we're going to hit 40 of them. And the inevitable question is, okay, well, what about those other 60?
Right.
And it's because I didn't set that expectation up front of the process of the timeline of how we go about everything. And so really creating the timeline to say, hey, we're not going after all the fish in the sea. We're going after the fish that actually have the ability to give, you know, and have the ability to fill us up as an organization. And that switch, that literal put that into play timeline. I keep calling it like my timeline switch. And that's what I have in my notes here too. Like it's, I feel like it's going to change how I even communicate from the start, because I would say that the majority of what we're talking about when it comes to grant writing is expectation management.
And
that whole process of selling expectations and scope of work and all of those pieces that go along with it really have this pull back, because every nonprofit wants to say, hey, I got you for this. Can you also add this?
Right.
And if those expectations aren't managed correctly, then you're going to lose relationships. You're going to lose those friendships. You're going to lose those clients. And that's not what I'm all about. So, you know, like there are times where it's like, hey, we need to pause. We need to readjust our expectations so that we're both on the same page, because I want this to thrive. I want this to survive. I want you to have money in your bank account so that you can continue the good work of whatever your organization is doing. And if that expectation isn't set from the start, or not adjusted as time goes by, or, you know, hey, maybe we thought we were on the same page and we definitely aren't, that timeline can get really messed up really fast. So those processes are killer for me right now, which is great.
Yeah. So just adjusting, like, and because we talk about that, like we have our whole ethical nonprofit sales strategy as far as like, and a lot of that is just like you said. So I love that it's impacting your business so positively in that way, just to say like, even just setting up expectations and from the beginning, and then reminding them too, right? Like you said, your monthly reports have gotten like more specific and clear, and you feel like you're really communicating, not just like, oh, this is how much we worked, but like, this is where we are in our plan. Like, this is where we are in that timeline, right? So that has helped you in your brain, but also like with those relationships, you know, that's going to be easier to
absolutely.
Meet. Yeah. It's huge. It's huge. I mean, that can be just doing those simple things, then what is that going to help? They're going to come on a renew again for another package, right? Because they're feeling valued and they're feeling heard, right? Throughout that time, which is so important.
Absolutely.
And then another thing you, I know you mentioned from the mentorship was just resetting the roles and responsibilities too of the people that are working with you, like being very clear, creating job descriptions. You look at these people that, you know, they're kind of like, well, maybe I'll try this out or that. So just doing a role reset. How is that in your business?
Yeah, it's definitely been interesting because I've now had of the 10 people that I have contracting with me, there's probably eight that have been around since 2020. So it's not, they're not new to Brian's chaotic mind of, hey, let's try this and see if it sticks. You know, where I think there's definitely an entrepreneur piece to it, but having this very clear expectation of, hey, this is not only what I expect of you as a contractor, and again, I'm getting into like contractor versus employee rules and all that kind of stuff. But from a contractor perspective, I always thought it was, as long as the job gets done, we're okay, you know, and I don't have anything to go off of other than that. And now it's just like, oh, I really need to give you like clear guidelines on what that actually looks like. And that switch has actually given more clarity to all of us of what the expectations are. And it's increased the bravado. I don't know the like people are more excited about it because it's way more clear on what the expectation is. And so now it's you know, I very much don't care when my contractors work. You know, if they want to do all of their work in a 3-day period, great. You know, like that doesn't matter. They could be on the other side of the world for all I care. Like, it just doesn't matter what the, you know, I have one of my contractors who will regularly email me at 3 in the morning because that's when she can't sleep, you know, and that's great. You know, if that's when she works, that's fantastic. I won't be awake, but I'll answer when I get back. But having the roles and responsibilities clearly defined and marked out just creates this breath of fresh air for everybody, because then it's not ambiguous of who's doing what, or whose account are we under, or how we put something in the tracker. All of that just gets defined, and then there's no ambiguity to it.
Yeah. And I also feel like, and this is one of the reasons we really coach on this too, is it increases quality control, the time that you have to spend. You don't have to spend as much time doing quality control because you have like, oh, these SOPs, like this is how you do it. Here's an example, right? Like your SOPs are so thorough that it takes them out of the wondering and maybe just taking a stab at something that might not work very well, or that you have to go in and kind of like, oh, I really got to check on this. And right. So have you found that too? Like you're doing less of that?
I would definitely say that there are times now that I have set those things up where I kind of look around and I'm saying, okay, well, what do I do with the time that I got back? You know, it's not answering questions of all of the back and forth that I used to have. It's just become clear. I mean, not that I'm lacking for things to do, but it's one less thing off my plate that, now that those questions are answered in process, then it becomes very clear that I don't have to deal with that on a consistent basis, or, you know, consistently say, this is what I expect of you. This is very, it's just very clear up front.
Love it. And then they feel more empowered because they're like, okay, I know exactly what to do. So totally. It's, you know, yeah, I love that so much. Love it. Yeah. The time that it allows, you're like, whoa, now I have time to like higher level things, right? CEO things. So love that so much. And even just like relating that to y'all who are listening out there or watching, like thinking about it, when board members come in of nonprofits, if they don't have a roles and responsibility and they're not really clear on their job description, that nonprofit is going to be all over the place. And a lot of it's just, you know, you might be like, well, I don't want to like, you know, it's they're volunteering though, Holly, to be on the board. I don't want to like give them all these duties. They're going to feel less impactful if they don't have that. They're going to show up less. They're going to be like, I don't even know if my time here is good because I don't even know what to do. Like, it's actually good to set up those things so people feel like, oh, I know exactly what to do and I'm going to show up. And I feel like I have meaning here and I can support the nonprofit. So the same thing in your business, kind of that switch you talked about, like even just how people show up. Did you kind of see that as well? Like that's part of like just having that kind of creates that energy.
Well, one of the things that you just said that kind of stuck out to me is specific to like board training. There are literal companies that are about board training and about board development, about board growth. You know, finishing my master's in nonprofit administration, I feel like I have a bunch more resources on all of the big parts of fundraising as a whole. Mm-hmm. And it like doesn't exist in the grant writing world. Nobody talks about how to build a grant writing consultancy or build a company based on just this aspect. There's tons of companies based on how to build a board coaching group or a major gifts, you know, piece or plan giving. There's 10,000 books on plan giving, right? But there really isn't in the nonprofit grant writing world, right? There might be from the federal and the state, but it's right. not this, the private foundation market, if you will. It's this nebulous, ever-changing, ever-growing group. I mean, even in the United States, grant writers aren't this plentiful group of people. It's a very limited amount of people that even do it in the first place. So it's not like there's people who jump in and say, yeah, grant writing, it's, you know, the next
they
the
fall next into it thing. Like you
it's right it's, yep. it's more of like, hey, if I can help in this area and I can find the team that can really support what this is and mm-hmm. and provide income for those that want to do it as kind of a side thing without having them having to create their own consultancy and compete and whatever. Like that's where I feel like there's a lot of value because again, it's not this other major piece of development that has all this support already. Right. So mm-hmm.
Love that. And yeah. And then just leading to one of the things that you said that has really helped is with your sales calls and like getting set up from your sales calls from the beginning, maybe vetting people who aren't a good fit. Like you said, you're more clear, like who you serve, what you do, and you've automated. So using once again, like processes to vet them before they come just by asking certain questions when they sign up for your Calendly link to book a sales call. Like right away, you can be like, oh, we're not a good fit. We'll not sign up for this. Or yes, we're totally a fit. So you're finding you're actually saving time just through processes. And you said, oh my gosh, I booked out six sales calls. Was it in one day?
One day.
So definitely like utilizing the sales structure that we have as well. So that's been helpful. Did you want to add anything onto that? Because I was like, that's amazing. Six sales calls in one day.
Yeah. I mean, automating things has definitely changed. Even just for like calendar management. Having multiple clients and having a singular calendar is a game changer. Mm-hmm. Something that was very difficult to keep up with when I was doing pen and paper. Or at that point it was pencil and paper because I was erasing a lot. But you know, how many times do people cancel a meeting because a kid got sick or, you know, there's snow or there's, you know, whatever other thing going on. Mm-hmm. It's the same thing with changing how you go about vetting organizations in that first phone call of saying, hey, now that I have your name and I know that you're interested, I need half an hour to go look at the few things that I look at just from the public side of things so that I get an understanding of what you're going to be talking about so that I don't have to ask those questions to you. And I can go deeper in that 15-minute or 30-minute phone call and really get to the crux of what you're asking and not tell me about what you do. You know, like I'm already going to be versed in what you do. We need to talk about what your needs are. And if I'm a good fit for your needs, that's a different conversation. And so that ability to structure all of that ahead of time is, you know, that saves hours of time, not 30 minutes. It saves hours of time.
I love that so much. I love that you've been able to already get like such a high increase in your revenue, in your sales. And you said you've been able to book out six new clients and, you know, kind of offboard ones that might not have been the best fit. Right. So now you're also like increasing the ideal client as well through this process, which is great.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I love that so much. So this has been awesome. I love that. And I can't wait. Like we got 12 months in the program with you. So to keep seeing your business grow and scale by implementing a lot of just systems that we talk about, a lot of policies, right. And just the mindset around that and really getting clear on your who and your services. So I know people have been listening to this and they're like, I am your ideal client though, Bryce. So, right, that's my nonprofit you're talking about. So how can they get a hold of you? Where can they reach out to you at?
The best place is the website. It's BKM ANDCO.com, which is BKM and Company. That's the best place. That's initial contact. And then it always flows to me. So I'll be able to be reaching out and connecting with you as soon as possible. Absolutely.
That's right. You'll get his sales calendar link to see if you're a good fit right away.
There you go.
You're going to get on that. And then, yeah, and you'll spend some time with them. Like you said, you don't have to talk about, like, who are you? It's more like you're going to go into deeper conversations about their needs, which is fantastic. So you guys definitely use that. 30 minutes, right? You have a 15 or 30 minute call?
Yes.
Yeah. Definitely you guys, yeah, use that time. It is going to be a great investment of your time to see how Brian can help you and his team of 10, so you don't have to hire a full-time grant writer. He's got your back. So anything else you want to add before we close out today, Brian?
I just really am appreciative of this time to be able to talk about it. I know that a lot of times in listening to podcasts and listening to whatever this looks like for people who are interested in seeking out help, I'm here for the little guy. I'm here for the organizations that need help and don't know where to look. So if that's you, feel free to reach out and let's have a conversation.
Love it. Love it so much. So yeah, thank you for taking your time coming on the Grant Writing and Funding podcast. And yeah, I just can't wait to continue the journey on with being with you on your company and as you keep helping the little guy and the little girls out. You got it.
Thanks, Holly.
Yep. All right. Take care.
I hope you enjoyed listening to today's podcast episode with Brian Marr, the owner and president of BKM and Company. Definitely check out all of the show notes today to find out more about Brian, the grant professional mentorship, and all the things that we're doing at Grant Writing and Funding. Just go ahead and go to grantwritingandfunding.com/314. Also, be sure to join our newsletter, The Hub Haven, while you're over at Grant Writing and Funding. And you can get a lot of great emails that we send out. We always drop the podcast episode of the week, so you can always be notified there. And we have our Hub Haven. So we have our stress-free nugget of the week that we also email out. And it's always about something to do with grant writing or freelance grant writing. And we get so many great reviews on just those newsletters alone, like our series, right? So how much we actually help, because we give so much value in our emails. You are definitely going to want to be on our email list. So jump over to grantwritingandfunding.com to go ahead and join our Hub Haven, our weekly email newsletter series, and to hear about all of the things that we have going on at Grant Writing and Funding. And if you love this podcast episode, please do me a favor and go ahead and subscribe to this podcast. Please leave a review on your podcast player, as that does help other folks find this podcast. All right, I'll see you next week on the Grant Writing and Funding podcast.